Get ready for another episode of the Life Strong Project.
And now in stereo.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Life Strong Project. Again, I'm your gracious host, AC. And on today, on the Life Strong Project, we're diving into the power of purpose. And anyone that knows me knows that I'm a stickler for understanding, you know, purpose, you know, doing what you're meant to do. And a lot of us struggle with that. I myself probably was one. You may be doing something currently, and you know, you may be even good at it. You may even like it. That's the thing. You may even like it, but that may not be your purpose. All right. So today we're going to be diving into the power of purpose, perseverance, and transformation with our incredible guest. Her journey is one of resilience, reinvention, moving frequently as a child, learning to adapt to uncertainty. I've got a full engineer on the show, petroleum engineer, I believe. She's an international change leadership consultant. She's an author. We'll get into that book here in a few seconds. She's also a certified PMP. All right. So this is not someone that, hey, is just going to be talking, you know, the good talk and, you know, not knowing what she's talking about. She's educated. She's experienced. So on today, I want the Life Strong family to welcome our gracious host, Miss Elena, in here. I got you, right?
You did. All right, AC. Yeah, we are going to be vibing in the room. Thank you so much for having me. Can't wait.
Great. That's awesome. So before we even get started, I want people to understand who Elena Hill is. I mean, where from what, because In the intro, you know, we talked about how you started from, overcoming tragedy and, you know, certain things that seems like it happened in your life. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and your humble beginnings?
I can. I think just to summarize myself, first and foremost, I'm a fun, outgoing nerd. That is how I describe myself. That is how I show up in the world unapologetically. And I'm an unapologetic daughter of the Most High. I'm a child of God. And it is my faith that has carried me through time and time again, trial and trial again. As you were mentioning in the intro, I moved a lot as a child. So I got really used to the, hi, my name is Elena, but you know, kids. So introducing myself became something that was so commonplace that I really got tired of. And by the time I was kind of a teenager, I was just like over it. I wasn't even going to introduce myself anymore. I was just going, I don't know, get through and get out. And then as I went off to college and, you know, just continued on with my journey, I started really beginning to embrace who she was and how she shows up and what she's purposed to do. And so that really changed not only my desire to introduce myself, because I learned to realize to not be selfish, that I had encountered, overcome, and experienced things that not everyone had. And that was never for me. It was always for other people, and that's what purpose is all about.
See, that's an interesting. So that's an interesting point that you just made. Doing things, and isn't that most of us? Because I mean, that's how we're trained as youth, as you know, we little kids. You know, we do things for people. You even though it's masked, I think a lot of times they say this is the best thing for you. A lot of times it's, if it's not for our parents, it's for teachers, it's for our soon to be employers, it's for people we come in contact with every day. And I think a lot of that, the structure that we're built on is we think we're doing it for us. Mm-hmm. Like, this is making me such a great person, or this is making me such an amazing individual and the best person, the best kid, the best adult or whatever. But underneath all that, we're really doing all that stuff for somebody else. How in the world can somebody And there's something in your bio that I really want to get into. Woo, I can't wait. But we're going to lead into it. All right. So how can somebody who is struggling with that, because, you know, maybe they're preteens, maybe they're young adult. I don't know. They could be my age. I'm not going to tell. I'm not going to put age out there, y'all. But they could be my age. How do we differentiate or discover that, man, I've been doing things for other people, not for myself?
I think when we look at the impact of an interaction, because we can look at the micro level, we can look at the macro level. So if we look, you know, at the one-on-one, to the interaction, did the conversation that you had walking with a friend, yeah, you got your steps in, blah, 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 but was your friend impacted by that? Did they have some benefit from that? When you are, you know, working on a larger scale, when you're at work, are you, or at school, so we'll talk, because we want to talk about some youth for a little bit. When you're at school, are you seeing, and this is that actually when it started to be clear for me, when I realized that, wow, I can help and support my classmates. Yes, there are certain, you know, benefits that I'll have for it, but I can help my classmates, I can help my community just by showing up and not being, not being afraid of the risk of showing up.
Okay. Whoa. So, can you expound on that? Not being afraid at the risk of showing up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we serve, we risk something. You know, we risk being uncomfortable. I probably, I think, into my early adulthood, got to the point where people could identify me as somebody who had never met a stranger. But I could tell you for a good part of my life, I was somebody who, I'd rather not fool with a stranger. And so it was this risk of being uncomfortable in social situations. I know certainly, like, if we are taking a point of personal privilege to talk to our youth today, I'm right, we spend so much time behind screens and not as connected as we would like to see them. Well, there is a risk of connecting with people in person. There is a risk of kind of putting yourself out there. And what happens when we look at that risk, one of my favorite phrases or terms is ROI. And that's our return on investment. And that's how we evaluate risk. And so when we evaluate the risks that we take interpersonally, did somebody else benefit from that? Was the risk worth it? And oftentimes we find out the answer is yes. And that's what helps us operate even when fear is present.
Wow. So, okay. So that thing that I was talking about that I really wanted in your bio, you said you really have a passion for working with women of color. So, and the reason I really want to talk about that is because right about now, and I don't want to set anybody off, but it has. I think it has to be said, because although I do not agree with what happened to him, there were things said by a certain individual about Black women, about them not being good enough, not being smart enough, not being just not being able to find their quote unquote own place, but that they have to take it from somebody else. So talk about, and because you are a,
I was like, what can I fan myself with? I don't have my fan over here.
Oh man.
Woo! Come on.
So, and you being a woman of color, of course, you've done all these things that we, and I'm sure many, many more, but just some of the, you know, the things that we talked about in the introduction, you know, a PMP. Let me, to put that into perspective, that's one of those certifications that just don't, you know, that's not a fly-by-night certification. That takes a lot of preparation, a lot of studying. I'm sure there were a lot of lonely nights, a lot of tears, and a lot of, man, I don't want to do this anymore.
You sound like you were there.
Yeah, I was. Exactly. I was. So, just to put that into perspective, but you're a PMP, you're a petroleum engineer. And I'm sure that's a field where there's not a lot of women. And definitely not a lot of women of color. So you have found your place. You found it. You worked, you struggled, you fought to find this place. Can you talk about the feelings you have when you hear somebody say something like that about women of color?
It fuels my fire. I mean, I was and still am. You see how easily I'm like, ooh, that came right back. That came right back like I was back on that day. And not only because of that day, because it's a lifetime. As you were pointing out, I have a petroleum engineering degree from a predominantly white institution.
And let me
be clear. It's not just a PWI. It is a PCI. It is a predominantly conservative institution.
Yes.
There's a distinction there in that I didn't spend my collegiate years surrounded by, white people who were welcoming me, like, come on. My existence was questioned very, very often. I found comfort in being one of the charter members of the NAACP chapter on campus. So these were conversations that I've been having for years. And a lot of those conversations were then further challenged by, the emboldening of the notion that not only that you feel that way, but that you can literally just say that to somebody's face. And then, of course, with the proliferation of technology, which I'm a firm believer of as a petroleum engineer gone, really tech, and understand the importance of using technology and how it helps us to amplify our voices. But unfortunately, that particular voice and that particular message has been so amplified and re-amplified. So it really brings back up not only the conversations that I had on that college campus, but the conversations that I had throughout most of my career.
Wow.
I actually had the opportunity to participate in an anthology, A Collective Breath. And one of the stories that I shared was the challenge of being a Black woman in a predominantly white male environment, industry, just when you talk about corporate America in general,
right.
The expectation of needing to be three times, depending on who you talk to, three times better than your white male colleagues in order to have at best the same opportunities. But then we also know that, you can still have all the things, the briefcase, all of it,
indeed,
and
yes,
still just watch somebody else walk right into your seat. And so the tax of that, I think we all collectively recognized after the unfortunate murder of George Floyd. But then when we see, from that racial awakening or reawakening and from the conversations around that, we realize that we got to protect each other. We got to protect ourselves and we got to protect each other emotionally, spiritually, and socially, where that's concerned.
Wow. I think one of the things that, and I don't want to, get on my soapbox here, but one of the funny thing, when he said that was like, these are the same conservatives who believe that women should stay at home and cook and have babies. But yet Black women are taking their spots. Make it make sense. All right. So let's talk about your book, because now this is the third book. So, I mean, I don't even know what the other two are named, so I'm sure she'll tell us. But what's your catalyst? The power of managed change, how purpose and passion can drive strategic life. What, number one, what spurred that? Well, it's your third book. You're an author. Like, you're my, so you can skip over that. I was saying, but I guess what struck you to write that book?
That book. So my first two books are a two-volume memoir entitled Love is a Catalyst, and the second volume, Love is a Catalyst, The Pain Behind the Purpose. So as you mentioned, some of the things that you read in my bio, not just moving around a lot. I mean, because moving around a lot sounds like you packed a lot.
Right.
No, but moving around a lot and enduring some of the challenges and trials of a parents who were really struggling, a mom who'd become addicted to drugs and her subsequent murder when I was a senior in high school. So I had overcome quite a few obstacles and challenges. And even when I talk about, I can't talk about college without shouting hallelujah, because it's a testimony that I not only made it there, but that I graduated. especially given the timeline and the things that had happened in my life. So having come into full awareness of that, and not just as much as I love telling a good story, I love the power of storytelling, going back to what we talked about in the top of this program about it's not about me, it's not for me. I really wanted that writing to set people free, women in particular. I love my male readers, so I've specifically not targeted that one. I've got some other things coming up for my sisters, though, because so much of that was universal, especially, you know, when I talk about, when I observe some of the challenges that my four boys have had, right? So just kind of incorporating that. So the reason why I was compelled to write What's Your Catalyst? It was taking not only the lessons from the story, but also looking at the intersection of strategy and how we can live our sustain our excellence in life without taking ourselves out. And that's really what motivated me to write that. I saw people who were like, oh, I'm doing this. And then when you check on them later, they're not doing it anymore. Not just the missing New Year's resolutions, but the importance of goal setting, but within the context of our lives, our careers, and our communities. And that was just really important for me to get that out there, and how purpose drives all of that.
So that being said, so how can someone, because I'm sure you know what your catalyst is, you wrote the book, but how can someone identify their own? Like, you know, if they're feeling stuck or uncertain, or they've started this thing, and maybe it's not the thing they should be doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something else. I don't know. How can somebody find their catalyst?
So first and foremost, you find your catalyst by sitting with yourself, because nobody is going to tell you who you are like you will. And in our world of busyness with the expectations of doing it all again, so leading into my next book, which will be my fourth book, I really, really want to tackle in more depth.
You stay writing them down.
I really want to tackle the idea of wearing a cape and doing it all and in many cases doing so many things out of season. And which is something, a seed that I sowed in What's Your Catalyst, but I really wanted to go deeper on that, because as women in particular, and so that's why I want my next one to be really focused on women, especially with the different expectations around parenting. Even if you've got a great co-parent, you are still going to have different expectations for yourself from a community standpoint and just personally. But it's really figuring out, you know, like sitting quietly. We underestimate the beauty of quiet, the beauty of the silence to hear. And again, this is where my faith informs me, the beauty of the silence to be able to hear from him, but to hear from that higher power, whichever, however you define that, because the reality is even atheists believe in something. And so I'm very respectful of multiple faith practices, but I'm also respectful of the fact that inside us is a compass. And the only way we'll know how to read that compass is if we sit time learning how to read it and calibrate it. And so our purpose is that internal compass that is directing where we should go, what our walk, what our goal should be. And so that's how it begins to inform goal setting. And then it helps us to engineer a career that is most effective for us. That may not look like your friends. It may not look like somebody else's. Ooh. And doing so in your life and in your community leadership and advocacy.
Woo. Okay. All right. Woo. All right. So let me ask this. You start, and I'm talking about your professional life here.
Right? Okay.
So you start, you graduate Texas A&M. And you go straight into, petroleum engineering. So you go straight into,
I went straight to the field,
straight to the field. So you go into this engineering, profession. And then I don't know when, but somewhere around there you say, I'm going to transition. I'm going to become, what, did you become a consultant straight away, or did you say, did you wrestle with it, or did you say, because I'm, look, I don't know how much money you made, but something tells me, something tells me it was a nice compensation package attached to petroleum engineer. We'll just say that. We'll leave it at that. What happened that made Elena say, yeah, it's a lot of money over here, but that's not my purpose?
So one, I love to answer that like I would answer kids a career day, because when they'd ask that, oh, as an engineer, do you make a lot of money? I said, well, you know, I can order steak and not really think much about it. Ooh, so, wow. but you know, to be honest, to answer your other question, so yes, I was an engineer, and then I transitioned into IT and transitioned and continued to evolve into IT project management, which led me to talent development, IT project management, right? So it was kind of all things tech, and then in the L&D space. And that was when I was really confronted with the idea of, you know, I realized that my goal was to help, my gift was teaching, and I wanted to do that on my own terms, if you will. It was partly about, you know, the desire for autonomy, for a family solution, but it was also that pursuing of that purpose of teaching. And when I really began to dig into gifts, like, you don't waste a gift. Like, if somebody gives you a gift and you just leave it sitting on the counter, no. So I felt so compelled to use those gifts. So that's really what led me to start my consultancy. And so that was about 11 years into my career, because it was really important to point out that I invested in myself. I encouraged the organization to invest in me. I got my PMP while I was there. And
they paid for it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They paid for it. The projects that I led for that multinational organization set me up, because here's real talk. Sis likes steak. I wasn't trying to start a business and not eat steak, right? So that's one of the things that I do with my clients is, you know, we're not going to step out and be broke. We're going to step out, and because the reality is, our purpose and our position go hand in hand. I talk about that in the book. And the reality is, as we are elevated, we know that with great power comes great responsibility. And my purpose wasn't to relinquish my power. My purpose was to continue to elevate that and then create space in my life to where I could use that positional purpose for the benefit of many others, now having the time to do so, now having the energy and the desire, because I tell you, when you kind of get a chance to decouple from some 9-to-5 stuff,
And that's real.
Yeah, it creates space in your life that you can then use for that purpose. Yeah. And so however that comes about, because I'm very, very mindful of that. I speak to a lot of corporate audiences. And so I'm not saying, okay, everybody run for the door, but I'm saying, how do you ensure that you are leading your career with purpose in such a way that you're not so consumed by the needs of the organization, that you're not taking care of your needs, your family's needs, your community's needs, because we are called for more than just our jobs.
Now that's a word. Whoa, you are called for more than just your job. And that, I think that goes back to the whole, I mean, so many of us, I strongly believe that so many people believe that their calling is their job. Mm-hmm. Like this is what I'm called to do simply because they're doing it. And why else wouldn't I be called to do it if I'm not doing it? Like, that mindset is, you know, it's amazing to me. Like, you know, like, no, like, this is a job. This is how you put food, or as you say, this is how you eat steak, whether or not you're thinking about it or not.
Now everybody wants a steak. The pita people don't get me, though.
I think. The thing that I would like to know is, you're making that transition, right? And earlier you spoke about, you know, the fears, the uncertainties, you know, overcoming those. Number one, now granted, I'm so glad that you put out there, you don't just, you know, when you come to this enlightenment or whatever it is that, okay, this is my passion, this is my purpose, I'm going to quit my job. No, but there is a process into working towards that, because there are so many. Elena, you're going to have me step on some toes. I'm going to get in trouble. There are so many, and because it doesn't really need any certification or anything like that, we call them life coaches, mm-hmm. whatever. There's so many people out there that claim that title that they just tell people to just step out on faith. Just, you know, if you believe in you, you know, you can do it. Look, I'll be honest, Steve Harvey's one, the whole no parachute analogy. And I'm like, Steve, if the parachute doesn't open, you know, you go splat. Like there is no plan B. I'm like, no, there's a plan B. I'm just a stickler for planning. But I'm glad you put that out. So, but for you during that period, was there any uncertainty? Let's not say fear. Let's say uncertainty, because you're moving from something you've been in 11 years and straight out of college. So that's a great chunk of your adult life at that point. Mm-hmm. That might be all of your adult life just about at that point. And all of a sudden, you're going to migrate, transition into something that doesn't have, you know, that I'm sure that reoccurring paycheck that, you know, that
direct deposit is a thing.
Oh, is it? Yes. So were there any uncertainties on your end?
Oh, yes. So yes, but I do like to follow success principles. So I'm going to affirm, not because Steve Harvey said it, but because the word said it. But because I actually have it right here. Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich reminds us of the importance of burning the boat. So if you're going to do something, and as a project manager, I believe in having contingency plans.
Yes.
But as a strategic project manager who has worked on very high stakes projects, I believe that the best laid plans don't have to revert to the plan B. So yes, you have one. So like you were saying about the parachute having a parachute, your best laid plan is you really don't want to have to use that.
Right.
So you really, right. So what it does is it encourages you to operate in excellence in such a way that you don't need the plan B. You have it because that's reassurance and that's wisdom. Right.
Okay.
And let's be clear. I don't consider savings a plan B. I consider savings part of the plan A.
Okay.
So that's the thing. So part of that fiscal responsibility, if you want me to step out on faith, because I use that term often when I share my journey, mm-hmm. I stepped out on faith, but I stepped out on faith and wisdom. And I think that's what really needs to happen. And you're right. There are people that are kind of like, oh, just jump. No, but if you jump, I want you to measure how high that's going to be.
Yeah,
the wind velocity, you know. So we want to make measured moves. And that's the reality. That's what I believe so wholeheartedly about how we navigate life's transitions, is that we don't just blow with the wind, because that just makes us a leaf. We are born to be trees that are rooted and established in love and in our understanding of who we are. It's where our purpose is. And then how we continue to shift what we do to continue to align with our purpose.
That's perfect segue. And I'm going to use your analogy. Perfect segue. Someone who is, and let's say they're operating as a leaf. They're a leaf. They're maybe just, they go with the wind, you know, to and fro, just being blown hitherto. All right. And how can someone who is in that stage in their life become that tree that you just spoke of?
That's where I really want them to, and I intentionally do this in the book as well, introducing people to some of the principles of effective living from Dr. Stephen Covey and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the things that he talks about is our character and that being a root and that, again, not blowing ebb and flow. And so when we get rooted in who we are, goes with that sit with yourself, as I was talking about. And and there's also, you know, strengths assessments. And I really encourage and advocate for all of the different ways that we can identify and validate our strengths, our gifts, who we are, how we show up, because that is a really, really important step in understanding our purpose. It's revealed in all of that. Like, Why do I like physics and talking? You know, like, why do I like both? Right. And so you begin to ask yourself those questions. That's an odd mixture, guy. What you doing? And then figuring out what you are then supposed to do with that. Yeah. And so that's just a big part of what I would tell the leaves, is to sit with identifying who you are, maybe the tree that you broke off from. And sometimes people need to reconnect with something. You mentioned kind of the current times and the current climate. Yeah. This is ripe for leaf people, because fear makes people just move to and fro, as opposed to the confidence that comes from, well, I can weather this storm. I can weather this political cycle. I can weather this economic downturn or the destruction of the White House. Lord. Or whatever it is that we're having to witness, standing confidently and boldly in who we are.
The terms passion and purpose, can you enlighten us? Because we hear those so often, so many times. Mm-hmm. What's your passion? What's your purpose? Are they synonymous? Number one, and number two, if not, what is the differences? How can someone who is, you know, currently, I don't know, they could be doing anything, but how do they know the difference from their passion to their purpose?
Very good question. Thank you for asking that, because I was even pondering that the other day, because I was like, do people know the difference? Passion is that which we love to do, we're excited to do, which was my segue from love as a catalyst, right? What is it that we love to do, that we enjoy doing? We can be impassioned about something. I often use an example of, I love to travel. I am a bona fide travel junkie. My husband and I, we catch flights, not feelings. Okay. So we have a passion about traveling. Purpose is about your direction, and it is about your intention. So if I were to put those two together, for example, I'm passionate about traveling because I like to see new places. It's fun. You know, I actually like being on planes. People are like, don't you not like being on planes? No, I kind of like my little window seat and, you know, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. But the purpose is the intent for which I would go somewhere and what it is that I plan to accomplish in said destination with said people. And why was I going? Our purpose begins to speak to the why of why we do something, why we are. And our passion is sometimes a manifestation of that, because we could be passionate about something that is our purpose, but not always. Because those things that we love to do, that might not be what we are purposed to do. Mm. And that is why navigating these waters in life can be challenging. And here's the other thing too, since you brought this up, I'm so glad. because I love supporting people who are like, oh, I'm so passionate about speaking, for example. I love being a professional speaker. I'm so passionate about speaking. Well, but you know, the passion for speaking is not going to help you eat steak. You have to be purposed to do it, and you have to have strategy around how you build a business around that. Passion alone is not enough to build a business, to build a life. Mm. It fizzles too.
That's deep. That's deep. And there's a lot of people that I've spoken to who I don't think they understand the difference. And they operate in that. Mm-hmm. Let's just say they operate in that. So you, as a leader, and as an author, as a change maker. As all these things, that's a lot of hats, by the way. That's a lot. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot that comes in. I bet you work probably harder now than you did almost as a petroleum engineer. I think that's the thing that, and it could be our upbringing, but the belief that the harder you work, the more money you make. And that's not necessarily, you know, they feel that, oh, you know, petroleum engineer, you worked hard. But, you know, if you work at Burger King, you don't work as hard. And I'm like, apparently you as a youngster never worked at Burger King.
Right?
That's
fire will take you out.
Yeah, man. Look, if you have not worked at Burger King and slipped on a greasy floor,
broke up on the fryer.
Holding a Whopper in your hand to take to the front. Look, you don't know what hard work is. Yeah. So with all these things, you know, that you've got going on, all these hats that you're wearing, what's the one thing, like, I'm sure you use some of your knowledge and your expertise and your experiences coming from your 11 years as a petroleum engineer, but what's that one thing that you can connect the dots to your previous career to what you have become now? What's that one thing that, you know, that bridge per se?
I would say strategy. It's just being strategic in everything that I do. I play chess, not checkers.
Okay.
I make sure that my that risks are evaluated, my moves are measured. I don't celebrate overthinking. I can be an overthinker, but I work against that. But I don't do things haphazardly. And, you know, to your point about hard work, and this is where, you know, people, oh, I'm going to follow my passions. If you, and I remember saying this at Career Day, and any of the kids I said this to, this is my public apology. If you find something that you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Oh, yeah, that's not true.
That ain't true. You know, it was on a poster and it felt good every day, but that's not true. But as a leader, I also have the privilege of building a team. And that's one of the things that's so important in entrepreneurship is, you know, is building a team and having the right people around you to support your success. I ditched the do-it-all. And I think for me, when I even started business, because I am a project manager, not just by training and certification, but really kind of through and through, it just kind of put on paper what I am inside. So I've always been a team player. I've always been the collector of individuals to work towards a common goal. So I was able to do more of that as I grew in my leadership role. So not as much when I was at the well site. But certainly throughout my career and certainly through my entrepreneurial journey of surrounding myself with people who could help support where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Wow. I'm so glad that y'all heard her. That's her public apology. Anybody who said, well, she told me.
Because
I'm sure she is working. I'm sure Ms. Hill is working very hard each and every day. Now she gets her travel time in too, but But the difference is, I'm sure now that she's aligned in her purpose, that and the work that she's doing seems more, I'm not going to say fruitful, spiritually fruitful, not physically, like. And when she was at the corporate, whoever, I'm sure it was fruitful in the pocket, in the pocketbook. But now it's fruitful, you know, in a lot more ways. Mm-hmm. So you do work physically, but the work just seems to, it just seems to mean more.
More meaning. Yes, it's absolutely more meaningful.
And that's, I don't know who started that. But I'm putting out this caveat for whoever started that saying, that's what they meant.
That's
that's what they meant.
I mean, it's true. You don't want to do something that you just despise, that, you know, so that is absolutely true. And that's where passion is important. But as I presented in at a DEI conference in Portugal last year, that feelings aren't always enough, especially when we talk about driving change and how we motivate ourselves. Yes, our feelings are the starting point. Emotional intelligence tells us that. But then we wrap that in logic and we drive it with strategy.
Oh, wow. Wow. So what's a piece of advice? Oh, Lord. I'm going to say two pieces of advice. And hear me out. A piece of advice that you'd give anybody. That's the first piece of advice. What's the first, you know, the piece of advice that you'd give anybody facing a major life change or that they're in that area of their life where they feel that they need to make a change? That's one. But after that, can you give a piece of advice for the Black women out there who feel the same thing? The advice may be similar, but something's telling me you've got something special for the Black women. So that's why I put that out there. That's why I said. So one, just in general, and two, for the Black women out there that is saying, I need to do something different.
Let's see. So saying that I want to do something different, the first thing I would ask is, where is that coming from? So either through journaling or personal inventory, because sometimes we can move out of discontentment from something and not really be focused on the joy that we'll get from what we're moving to. So is the change because you're running from something or you're running to something? So that's always an important part of the evaluation. For my sisters, I would ask if what you're running to is going to be confirmed that it's not going to be just as bad as what you're running from or walking from, because that's one of the things that can happen in either relationships, our work, you know, commitments, is that we think, you know, there's that expression about the grass being greener on the other side. Well, that grass was painted green, you know, so just really being able to confirm that what you want to move to is really for you. And I really led this caution because social media, which is an amazing tool, I'm certainly not degrading the tool, but we end up with so many subliminal reminders of what we should be doing and could be doing that we sometimes can lose focus of what we are doing or what we are meant to be doing. So just be careful that we spend time weighing those out. I'm not encouraging anybody to be stuck in analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis, excuse me. I don't want to encourage anybody to be stuck or to overthink, but I do want you to walk around the problem, the challenge. That's why I encourage a SWOT analysis. Simple, it's easy, it's quick. It can help validate your decisions and ensure that what you're moving to is truly beneficial and even more beneficial than what you're moving from, because otherwise you might need to stay there.
Wow. Man, Ms. Elena, how can someone who is looking, who might be hearing this conversation right now, and they say, man, I would love to reach out to Ms. Hill and really, you know, just soak in all of the knowledge that, you know, she can share. How can they reach out and connect with you?
Well, they can find me online at alanaleadschange.com. That's A-L-A-N-A, leadschange.com. And on my website, you can sign up for a free consultation. We can have a conversation about what might be challenging you, what you may be walking around, and how I may be able to support you.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. So no social media?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. And then, of course, I'm always on LinkedIn for my corporate and corporate facing audiences. I'm on Instagram as Elena M. Hill PMP, on Twitter as well as that, and on Blue Sky. And of course I play on Facebook. So if you come and find me on Facebook, that's my playground. So, but holler at your girl if you're there and you have any questions.
All right. So last question. And the only reason I'm asking this is because how our conversation went when we first got on before we started the show. Ms. Hill, top five old school hip hop artists. And that's only because you made the Dana Dane reference. So I said, okay, we're going to see how much of a hip hop head she is.
All right. All right, so Layna's coming out right now. Let's see. So I got to start with my boy Ice Cube because, they call me Yo-Yo in college because I knew so many Ice Cube lyrics. Which then takes me to N.W.A. You're sensing a little bit of a genre. Yeah, I grew up in gangsta rap. All about some gangster rap.
What size?
I got to mention my boy LL. So LL Cool J, for the poster that was on the wall, for the lyrics that he spit, and just for the energy that he brought to the stage. Let me see, that's three, right?
That's three.
Let's see. Oh, I have to say, De La Soul, because I really love.
Thank you.
That was a little bit of a shift,
yes.
but it was a beautiful shift. It was so liberating, and it was so a reminder of our empowerment and of who we were, even around that time. And I am going to laughingly close off with Shaq, because I have to buy his tape when I was in college, and I listened to that thing so many times. I think it stopped working. But we don't know him as that. But that little tape, that little record that he put out, I'm gonna leave him up there though. You said also.
If Shaquille O'Neal happens to listen to this episode by any chance, stay in your lane, stay in your purpose, bro.
I love this, Jack. Make another one. No, don't. But no, I really do have to close out with I was struggling for the name, but I'm like, ooh, the red, the black, and the green.
The X Clan.
You know how that happens when it just doesn't roll right off the tongue in that moment. But
yes.
Now I gotta tell you this if I can with the clothes. I was mentioning my husband. We will throw on some X Clan out here in the burbs. We would just be rolling through black.
No,
riding down the street. Nothing brings it out like X Clan. So,
nothing. Public Enemy would be a close second, but X Clan was.
Yes.
Boy, if you want to, embrace your blackness in hip hop.
Right now.
No. Nobody did it like the Klan. Man, Miss Hill, Elena M. Hill, we appreciate you stopping through the Life Strong Project. Thank you for sharing your expertise, your knowledge, your laughter, your whole vibe. It's thank you. Thank you. All right, So Life Strong family, that's our show today. Elena has reminded us that change isn't something to fear. It's something to, manage and master by connecting our purpose to our actions and leading with emotional intelligence. We can navigate even through the toughest transitions with clarity and confidence. Remember, if you'd like to learn more about her, reach out to her on her website. What's the website again?
ElenaLeadsChange.com.
There it is, ElenaLeadsChange.com. Be sure to check out her book, What's Your Catalyst? First of all, before we go, this is your third book.
This is my third book, yes.
Name the first two, because people may want to go out there and read the first two before they even read the third. I don't know. What's the first two?
The first two. So the first one is Love is a Catalyst. And that was the story of our family overcoming cancer when it struck in our family.
Okay.
The second one is Love is a Catalyst, the Pain Behind the Purpose. So it's the prequel, if you will, to that. And I like to call it my superhero origin story. And then What's Your Catalyst is this practical application with lots of storytelling and principles to help you navigate and lead change in your life and in others to build the great communities that we want to live in.
Wow. So there you have it, all three books. Please go out there. Is it on Amazon?
Yes, they're on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. Anywhere where books are sold.
Go out there, find your copies, and let's support Miss Hill. Again, Miss Hill, thank you so much for you stopping through. Again, thank you all for tuning into this episode of Life Strong Project. If this conversation inspired you, share it with someone who's facing change and needs a little encouragement on today, right? That's all we've got. Remember, guys, your life is ever fleeting. Cherish them. Your life is ever changing. You have to adapt to it, and your life is yours. You're the only one who can live it. Until next time, stay strong, stay purpose-driven, and keep living your life strong. That's it. Peace.